States for 60 days. At the end of 60 days, or maybe even during 60 days, I'll extend it or not, and I'll maybe change it. I might modify it.
We now know much more about Donald Trump's immigration ban. It's Friday, April 24th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. You are part of this program, so join us on any of our VOA Asia social media platforms. Also coming your way, the top U.S. diplomat has some harsh words for Beijing. Coronavirus lockdowns around the world have led to much cleaner air. And we'll tell you about a hot-selling dessert in the shape of what many people are missing. That and much more on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order Wednesday suspending for 60 days the issuance of permanent residency status, also known as green cards. He described it as an effort to protect American workers' jobs during the coronavirus pandemic. While Trump said the order is powerful, as White House correspondent Patty Wanika-Swera reports, the action contains a wide series of exceptions and may only affect a small number of people.
More details have emerged on President Donald Trump's plan to enact a 60-day suspension effective April 24th for those seeking permanent residency, also known as a green card.
We want Americans to have the jobs. We want Americans to have the health care. We want to take care of our citizens first. We have to. It's a very powerful order. It's for 60 days. At the end of 60 days, or maybe even during 60 days, I'll extend it or not, and I'll maybe change it. I might modify it.
The executive order affects certain categories of green card applicants who are outside of the U.S. and does not apply to individuals already in the country seeking to adjust their immigration status. Exceptions include spouses and children of Americans, military families, wealthy investors or EB-5 category, and current green card holders outside of the country, as well as temporary guest workers, such as those who work seasonally on farms. In effect, the ban would only pertain to a small group of people, despite Trump describing it as powerful.
It's powerful in that it is new. However, I would describe it as rather narrow and temporary. So you're talking in the 300,000 number of people or even less that this would apply to.
There is also an exception for healthcare professionals entering to combat the pandemic and their families. Trump signed the order Wednesday afternoon, but has tweeted about it since Monday. The broad language in the tweet about suspending immigration came as a surprise and ignited confusion. Immigration attorney Hassan Ahmad.
Almost immediately, the phone calls and the emails and the text messages started coming in from clients all across the board, people that were, you know, mid-process applying for green cards inside the United States, people stuck still outside the United States, people who were waiting for their interviews, and today people who are actually already have their green cards filing for citizenship. Even they're wondering whether this is going to affect them.
It's unclear how much impact this order would have on the ground, since much of the U.S. immigration system already has stopped due to the pandemic, with almost all visa processing indefinitely suspended for weeks. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Japanese health officials say 48 crew members of an Italian cruise ship docked in the port city of Nagasaki have tested positive for the novel coronavirus, including 14 cases confirmed on Thursday. The United States is accusing China of taking advantage of the COVID-19 outbreak and increasing its military activities near Taiwan and in the South China Sea. An appeals court in Vietnam has upheld a lower court decision to sentence a music teacher to 11 years in prison for criticizing the government on Facebook. Analysts are predicting that China's recent high-profile posturing over Hong Kong signals a bumpy political future for the semi-autonomous city and the likely return of mass protest. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says WHO officials are still not publicly calling out China for failing to share information about the origins of the coronavirus. A top U.S. diplomat is defending President Donald Trump's decision to pause U.S. funding to the World Health Organization for 60 to 90 days. Global health experts have criticized Trump's move, saying the organization's work is more vital than ever. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has the story.
As the coronavirus continues to take a toll on people around the world, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is blasting China's ruling Communist Party, the CCP, for withholding information on the deadly virus and criticizing the World Health Organization for failing to call out Beijing.
Even after the CCP did notify the WHO of the coronavirus outbreak, China didn't share all of the information it had. Instead, it covered up how dangerous the disease is. It didn't report sustained human-to-human transmission for a month until it was in every province inside of China. It censored those who tried to warn the world. It ordered a halt to testing of new samples, and it destroyed existing samples.
The U.S. is the largest single donor to the WHO, but global health experts say now is not the time to withhold funds to the organization.
Personally, I cannot think of anything more bizarre and more harmful than freezing funding to the World Health Organization during this pandemic. It does not make any sense whatsoever.
Yamie pointed out that the WHO has been providing scientific guidance to nations across the world, as well as distributing COVID-19 testing kits and protective equipment. Secretary Pompeo says the U.S. is leading the global fight against the virus, providing $775 million to 100 countries.
The United States is the most generous nation on the planet, has been for the past 3 years, will continue to be this year.
The World Health Organization denies it has been too lenient on China and says now is not the time to cut off funding. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A new analysis shows lockdowns restricting travel to halt the spread of coronavirus have resulted in unprecedented reductions in deadly air pollution around the world. Major cities that suffer from the world's worst air pollution have seen reductions of deadly particulate matter up to 60%. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue. As the coronavirus pandemic raises the specter of hunger in India for tens of thousands who have lost livelihoods, communities are cooking tens of thousands of meals for those in need. The efforts range from small to big ones. Anjana Pasricha looks at some initiatives in Gurugram, a business hub near the capital of Delhi.
Inside a kitchen in a housing complex in Gurugram, cooks mashed potatoes, season vegetables and make bread to prepare about 100 meals every day for families whose money has run out. The rations are bought with contributions from residents for whom this kitchen usually makes food. The cooks make sure it is a satisfying meal.
We make spicy food so that it is not bland and those who eat it find it tasty.
At a commercial kitchen that usually caters Asian food, cooks are preparing hundreds of nutritious meals of rice and lentils for the hungry under another community initiative.
We see a lot of men who would have been working and they don't have any means, so they're standing there. We keep getting calls, urgent calls. So today we got a call with 14 day wagers who are stuck in the Nathupur DLFA 3 area. They haven't had food for 2 days.
Stories of tens of thousands of migrant labor stranded in cities without jobs and money after India imposed a stringent lockdown to contain the coronavirus prompted efforts ranging from modest to bigger ones. That includes restaurants. Although they remain shuttered, some have fired up their stoves.
Well, these people don't even have money to eat. They have no jobs. They have no way to feed their children. And I don't think, it can be worse of a situation for a human being than to be put into that kind of a scenario. So that really touched a chord.
His restaurants prepared about 5,000 meals a day.
Our job in the restaurant industry is to feed people. So this is what we do.
Generous contributions from friends and others has enabled Arjun Pandey to scale up from 200 meals to over 2,500 a day.
This became a true community initiative, and I think that's the biggest take back for me, or one of the reasons that sort of empowers me every day when I go out to distribute these meals, is the number of volunteers, is how society is standing together. All of us have united as one to fight this pandemic.
Such efforts to ensure that the poor don't go hungry may have to be sustained for long, as the struggle to find jobs will not end anytime soon amid a battered economy. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Medical students from Georgetown University in Washington have launched a volunteer organization called Med Supply Drive to help doctors get very needed medical supplies during the coronavirus pandemic. The students collect as many face masks, gloves, disinfectants, and hand sanitizers as they can from tattoo parlors and labs to pass along to doctors who are working around the clock to save people. Licia Bacales reports on this story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Face masks, gloves, disinfectants, and hand sanitizers. Half a dozen medical students are helping in the fight against the coronavirus in their own way.
A couple of my classmates and I started Med Supply Drive. Our clinical rotations were delayed, and at the same time we were hearing this very intense need from emergency rooms and hospitals for PPE, personal protective gear. And so we started this initiative as six students at Georgetown, and now it's grown over to over 600 students in the country.
All members are still medical students, so while they can't physically help in the hospitals, they can round up and donate PPE equipment.
I didn't think that I'd be useful on the front line, but I could definitely supplement the front line, you know, this way.
Volunteers started with calling various places that they thought could still have some sort of PPE and disinfectants left. And since all university courses were being conducted online and students went back home for the time of the quarantine, they managed to conduct their volunteering work in 42 American states.
We started off mostly by reaching out to different companies like research labs, tattoo parlors, nail salons, dentist offices, just like maybe construction companies, anywhere that we think would have PPE like gloves or masks that they can donate. We like called them, emailed them, and we got a lot of positive responses from places like that.
Students themselves pick up the donations or have them brought to their doorstep. Many of them have dedicated some space in their apartments to serve as an impromptu warehouse.
We have a taped off area in my house so that all the supplies will stay there. So when people drop off supplies to my house, they leave it on the porch. And then I come down with gloves and I wipe it off, and then I put it in the clean area so that it stays contained in that one place.
Then the supplies get packaged and taken to a number of hospitals.
I spent time making contacts at the hospital, so I would just cold call the front desk and say, hi, I have supplies. Can someone take them in the hospital? And from there, we started building this relationship where they would reach out to me and say, hey, Neej, we're in need of this. And I would reach back out to the departments and to the labs and say, does anyone else have this? And I'd just kind of blast out emails like that.
On average, in every major city, about 10 hospitals work with Med Supply Drive. The organization has been working for less than a month, but the students have already collected and donated thousands of boxes with medical supplies and PPE.
We've had over 100,000 donations. Completed, and over 10,000 masks, I believe.
Med Supply, you have completely changed the game for us. Thank you so much. You are phenomenal humans, and thank you, thank you, thank you. There's just genuinely no way to say how appreciative we are.
Despite the great start, volunteers say the supply of face masks and gloves is running low. So they are hoping for alternative ways to help doctors and have already found volunteers who want to sew masks for the hospital staffs and 3D print hard face masks. Felicia Bokalets in Washington, NRIs, VOA News.
Developing at this hour in Asia, North Korean state media has made no further mention of leader Kim Jong-un's health or his whereabouts. That a day after intense international speculation over his health. It was sparked by media reports he was gravely ill after a cardiovascular procedure. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Twitter and Facebook at VOA Asia. The pandemic's lockdown has not been good for most businesses, but one that has benefited is the sale of alcoholic beverages. And while liquor and beer sales have gone up, smaller craft beer brewers, whose popularity had been dramatically rising, are now in danger of being tapped out. Lori London of VOA hears about it with reporter Chris Morris.
The craft beer industry over the last several years has sort of been exploding. You've seen a lot of growth, and as of right now, there are 8,150 craft breweries in the country. That's kind of a loose definition. It can be anything from Samuel Adams to that little small brewery around the corner from you. The majority are the smaller ones like that. And what's happening right now is the craft brewers of America are seeing a massive drop in business, and we could see thousands closing sometime within the next 6 months.
Any idea how widespread that would be?
It really depends. The Brewers Association, which is sort of the trade organization for craft brewers, put out a survey in the last week or so saying with current costs and revenues and everything with the social distancing measures that are going on, how long can you last? 2% said, I'm closing right now. 12% said, no more than 4 weeks. 45%, over 45% said they can only last 3 months. Mm-hmm. Now, if it is that 45% that do shut down, that's 3,735 craft brewers throughout the country.
Wow, that's just in the U.S.
Yes, correct.
Why are they having to shut down? Is there no other way they are able to compensate in some other way?
Small craft breweries tend to make most of their money from foot traffic. People come in, they like the experience of tasting things in the tap room, and that's where they make their money. And a few distribute on kind of a local level, but not that much. Also, they make a lot of their money from draft sales to restaurants and bars. And because there are no restaurants and bars open anywhere, those sales are off. And because of social distancing, the tap rooms are closed. So they're making just a very, very small percentage of their income right now. The average craft brewery has seen its sales drop at least 65%, a lot more seeing in the 70s at this point.
Shifting a little bit here, we heard a lot about Corona beer sales slumping over the coronavirus. What are you hearing about that?
That was a fun story that some people bid on, but it actually isn't true. That survey that came out saying that people were blaming a Corona beer for coronavirus or cutting back on buying it, that came out right at the end of February or so of this year. And Bart Watson, who is the chief economist of Brewers Association, did some digging. He said he found out that sales over the past 4 weeks were up 3%, actually, and about over 3% for the year before that. So really no effect. Corona, like Budweiser and Bud Light and some of the other big national chains, they make most of their sales in stores. And like you said at the beginning, people are buying beer and wine and spirits right now because they're trapped at home. And you buy them in stores.
So Corona is not suffering.
Corona is doing just fine to this, yes.
That was in February. So where do Corona beer sales stand now?
Well, they're doing pretty good. They're still on the shelves. But it is worth noting that Grupo Modelo, which is an Anheuser-Busch subsidiary, they're the group in Mexico that makes Corona. They also make Modelo and Pacifico beers. They were deemed non-essential by the Mexican government. And so they are supposed to remain closed through the end of this month. Now, they're trying to be qualified as essential and get back to work. But there actually was a rush in Mexico for Corona beer when that order came down. But here in the U.S., there's still plenty of supplies.
VOA's Lori London speaking with reporter Chris Morris.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
Doctors at the University of California, San Francisco this week began testing residents in the coastal town of Bolinas for both COVID-19 and antibodies to the virus. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports on why the researchers chose such a small town for the study.
One by one, volunteers directed residents to drive into Mesa Park, where the University of California, San Francisco has four testing sites set up for nasal swabs and finger pricks. The town's relative isolation can provide a useful case for learning how the disease spreads, says university professor Dr. Einar Sawyer.
There's no road that runs through our town, so we're a fairly isolated, rural, and stable ecosystem right now for the last several weeks. So it'll be very interesting to see the footprint of the virus.
But this is not an isolated study. In addition to Bolinas, another study is also planned in a more urban area.
The Mission District of San Francisco, where it's very densely populated, people are living very close to each other, and it's very connected. So by sort of bookending the different types of communities that we're evaluating within a very short period of time, it's all happening within a week, we hope to be able to extrapolate much more to different places throughout Northern California.
The goal is to test as many people as they can, so they've made the testing free. Dr. Sawyer says the researchers hope they'll get answers to a treasure trove of questions.
Are the early antibodies in a person who's still infected? Are the late antibodies someone who's not infected, but do they have immunity? We don't really know that. And if they do, how long does it last?
In addition to the 1,600 residents in Bolinas, the researchers aim to test people who work in the town but live elsewhere, possibly boosting the total number of people tested to 2,000. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
One of the most destructive volcanic eruption events in recent history took place when Hawaii's Kilauea erupted from early May through early September 2018. A new study from researchers at the University of Miami in Florida suggests that the 2018 eruption was likely triggered by extended and occasionally extreme rainfall in the months prior to the event. Using rainfall measurements, the researchers examined the fluid pressure within the volcano's structure over time, which they say is a factor that can affect the chances for mechanical failure in the ground subsurface, driving volcanic activity. They found that fluid pressure at the site just before the eruption was at its highest in almost half a century, and proposed that this expedited movement of magma beneath the volcano. The U.S. Geological Survey says about 22 square kilometers of land was flooded by lava during the event. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Sudden scarcity of one of life's most humble but necessary household supplies, toilet paper, has breathed life into a Finnish bakery that was facing closure due to the threat of COVID-19. This facility in Helsinki has been repurposed to create cakes made in the shape of toilet paper rolls, which has been an instant hit, putting a smile on her customers' faces and keeping her staff employed. VOA's Julie Tabo has more on that.
The owner of a bakery in Helsinki, Finland, has found a way to save her store from financial ruin due to COVID-19 by creating cakes that look like rolls of toilet paper.
For us, it's a game changer, and I'm relieved because I'll know that all my employees are safe for months now.
Staff say that as the coronavirus spread, customers started canceling orders as panicked consumers began to hoard toilet paper. This sparked the idea of a toilet roll cake.
Real toilet paper ran out of stock in stores, and one of our bakers said, "Wouldn't it be nice to have a toilet paper cake on our counter?" She suggested making a larger version than the real thing that could be cut in smaller pieces for the customer.
So they made 5 cakes, which sold out within a few hours.
They started to take photos of the cakes and upload them to Instagram and Facebook,
and became an instant hit on social media. The cake's core is made out of oat batter, surrounded with passion fruit mousse filling, and covered with white fondant. The bakery now has hundreds of orders, and extra people have been hired to keep up with demand.
My husband is having birthday tomorrow, and I thought this is perfect cake for him.
Everyone is so interested in this cake, and it has somehow become the picture of the crisis. It's so nice.
Novelties such as specialty cakes are reminders that a little levity in times of crisis go a long way to helping people cope during difficult times. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing director, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy your day.